This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Number 121. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is a science fiction and fantasy podcast, so you don't have to.
Yay, we're the instance.
Oh, I stole that tagline. I'm not supposed to do that. I just like it so much, I want to say it every single time.
It's a pretty good tagline.
It is pretty good. But anyway,
we're stealing.
This is a science and fiction fantasy podcast. Fiction and fantasy podcast.
Science fiction.
You know what I'm talking about. Where we talk about the latest and greatest in the genre news. We talk about the stuff you guys are talking about over on Goodreads. We talk about the latest book pick of the month. And we talk about alcohol sometimes.
Sometimes. We're not promoting its use, just using it.
Precisely. So what are you drinking this week, Tom?
You know, I just was over visiting a guy who is gave me a bottle of Jameson's. So I'm drinking
Jameson's. I'd like to
know that guy. Yeah, I know, right?
Sounds like not a good bad guy to know.
Yeah, yeah, he's doing some business with them, and so he's got a bunch of like free Jamesons laying around. Which, I mean, nice work if you can get it.
I like your fancy LA lifestyle,
right? I know. Well, you know, my friend is hooked up with Jameson. So anyway, yeah, he was telling me. Did you know? Not to get too sidetracked, that Jamesons sell so well that they can't make enough Jamesons to satisfy the demand.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a good scarcity. Yeah, that's
no
good.
No kidding.
Nothing
a
wrong
good problem
with that. Wasn't there an issue with Maker's Mark this week too? Like they were going to lower their alcohol content, and then people got so angry that they changed their mind.
I heard some rumblings about that. Yeah,
they were like, "Oh, yeah, just kidding about that. That was apparently a bad idea.
Could never do that."
I am drinking the Puntacular Connoisseur Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yes, I know you're a connoisseur, but what vine are you drinking?
Connoisseur. C-O-N-O /S-U-R.
That's the name.
Yes.
Conno. That's worse than Carmen-air.
Carmen-air.
Which is what I was drinking.
So when you're saying that, do you mean like car, like a vehicle?
Yeah.
Then men, car, like people, and, yep. And air, like the sky.
Yeah, except the grape is a Carmen-air grape.
Okay. So is it like a little picture of a guy sitting in the car?
No,
like
it should
off
be.
A cliff?
Yeah. Okay. It really should be. Him like just flying through the air in his
Whee!
Car. Well, two guys.
That's a drunk driving campaign right there.
Oh, right. No, that's a bad idea. Don't do
that's
that.
That's a terrible idea. Anyway, we should move on to some actual news, starting with the quick burns.
So Stephen Donaldson has delivered the third and final draft of The Last Dark. That is the fourth and concluding novel in The Last Chronicles of Thomas Covenant, which I know a lot of people in our audience are fans of because every once in a while it gets suggested as a pick.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't get into it.
So you tried to read the Last Chronicles of Thomas Covenant, and you
Maybe I didn't. Sometimes I think I get Thomas Covenant confused with Doctor Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Oh yes, those are not the same.
They're not the same. You know why I think I do? I think because whenever I talk about Jonathan Strange, I didn't mean Doctor Strange. Jonathan Strange.
I knew what you meant.
Thank you. People say, "Oh, it's kind of like Thomas Covenant because you kind of don't like the characters."
Uh huh.
So I think that's where they intersect in my brain. So I realize they're not actually the same book, but it always makes me think of
Jonathan
Strange.
So Lord Foolsbane is the first book in the series.
Yes, that has been recommended for us many times.
And on the Wart Zone, Adam Whitehead points out, this novel is scheduled to be published in November, 2013, 36 years and 6 months after the first book in the novel. And there's only four. So, well, George R. R. Martin
there's
fans.
Nine, though. Isn't there not actually nine? I think there's been. Hold on. I've read in this that there are actually nine books somewhere.
Oh, am I? Okay. Because yeah, I know it's the fourth
in the series.
This is the 10th Comus Covenant novel overall. Okay, never mind.
Okay.
You're right. This is only the fourth in The Last Chronicles.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Okay.
But still.
But still. That's some George R. R. Martin right there. Yeah. That's some.
Stephen
maybe R. Donaldson, even more.
Also not your bitch.
Not your bitch. No, no one is actually our bitch. We should just start accepting that.
You're bitchless.
Now, this is great. There's this article over on IO9, a very, very thorough analysis of all the words and characters that appear in J.R.R. Tolkien's books. Now, this is like straight up, if you are a data nerd, this is for you. It is incredible to look at. So you can see how many times Bilbo's been mentioned, or Smaug, or certain places, or how many times someone said precious, or second to breakfast. And this covers everything in The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, and The Silmarillion.
It's like a concordance on steroids.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I just think this is great. It's called An Interactive Analysis of Tolkien's Works, The Lord of the Rings Project. It's at L-O-T-R, Lothar. I always say that Lothar. Lotharproject.com/statistics/books. And you can just click on keyword frequency, character mentions, common words, sentiment analysis, character co-occurrence, word appearance, and chapter lengths, among many of the things. I'm going to click on common words just to see.
If you like Lord of the Rings and you like infographics, you will be in heaven.
Yeah, I don't even want to do the rest of the podcast now because I just want to sit here and look at this.
Careful, you will. You don't click on things. You'll get sucked into these graphs.
I'm clicking on things.
Stop clicking!
So the Lord of the Rings has the highest word count in totality, of course. Let's see. The Silmarillion is longer than The Hobbit. The Hobbit is actually the shortest of all of the works, right. Which is not that surprising.
Sense. Well, shorter than The Silmarillion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Unique word density. What was that sound?
That was me clicking.
Clicking?
With my tongue.
Oh.
About. Because I was mispronouncing The Silmarillion.
Oh, you just did it again. That's gross.
Sorry.
The Hobbit has the highest unique word density at 6.88%. I could literally do this all night, so I'm going
to
stop.
These graphs are crazy. These are like graphs of the early internet when they were trying to graph out the web connection.
Oh, this one's neon colors. I don't even know what this means. I just want to look at it.
I don't even know if we want to go to our next one, the Pulp-O-Miser.
Oh, this is so good. I love
from
this.
From Thrilling Tales. The Pulp-O-Miser allows you to create your own pulp magazine cover from the glory days of science fiction magazine. So, for instance, the example, I think I saw this maybe on Boing Boing, Night of the Memes in Text Area 1. Then you get to pick text column position, whether you want to justify the text, drop shadows, kind of typeface you want. And then you get this crazy, like, Tales of the Rocket Patrol.
I made one
Night
that said,
of the Memes from Outer Space.
Step into the mysterious worlds of the weird future, Mr. Little Jeans from Outer Space.
Nice.
But they didn't have any cat covers. I kind of wish you could, like, upload your own image and then do, like, an Instagram-ish kite type filter that would, like, pulpify it.
Yeah, because you can choose the title, but it's a little limited on backgrounds are just sort of gradients and stuff.
Yeah, or like pre-picked people.
Yeah,
pictures, steampunking looking people.
Still pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's really fun. I'm really jealous actually that I didn't come up with this. Oh, you can do outdoor scenes. What's this one? Oh, this is a different one.
Is it still? Can you upload, or is it still?
It's like it's no, you can't upload. But it's like they have like fantasy style ones and.
Gotcha.
Very cool. It's a lot of fun. It's at thrilling-tales.webomator.com, among many other things that I would love to check out.
If those aren't two things to get like you to lose your entire week and fall behind on Bridge of Birds, then I don't know what to tell you.
Totally. So speaking of anthologies, tell me about the SF Signal project going on.
Well, yeah, Brian Thomas Schmidt has a post up on SF Signal, apparently at the invitation of John DiNardo. from SF Signal about Raygun Chronicles, a space opera for a new age Kickstarter. It's an anthology of new and reprint space opera stories, contemporary but with a classic bent. So they're going to try to dig a lot of the old great stories from that kind of era we were just talking about with the lurid covers, and get them to be shown again, get people exposed to them again, but at the same time publish some new stuff that is in that style that you kind of don't see anymore.
That's great. I misread this. I thought it was related to SF Signal, but I guess not.
No, it's just a
friend of
it's
the blog.
It's a friend post. It's a guest post. But yeah, they wanted to bring back space opera. He writes, it was a desire to find writers who were doing space opera in that classic style today. And one key source was an e-zine, which had just gone out of business, called Raygun Revival. Mm-hmm. Its publisher, Everyday Publishing, is run by friends of mine. And the three of us had discussed working together in the past, but we're waiting for the right opportunity. So check out Raygun Chronicles on Kickstarter. And of course, we'll have the link at swordandlaser.com.
Very cool. And then finally, for quick burns tonight, The City and the City is going to be live on stage in Chicago.
Wait, the Mieville book?
Yes, the Mieville book, the Lifeline Theater.
They're just going to put the book on stage?
They're just going to put the book there. You just have to stare at it for a while. It's very avant-garde. no, it's real people. It's real people reenacting. Well, not reenacting, but it's an adaptation of China Mieville's book, The City and the City, from the Lifeline Theater. Now, it's the preview is starting today. That was the 15th, and it will continue until the 24th of February. And the full run is going to take place from the 28th of February until April 7th. So if you're in that area, you still have time to check it out and get tickets. I am so jealous. It actually crossed my mind to fly to Chicago to go
see. No kidding. It crossed my mind, too.
Did it?
Chicagoland gets everything.
Maybe we should
go. The worst time of the year to fly to Chicago, but we can wait till April. Right?
I guess maybe it might be a little more
late March.
A little better in April. That's a good point.
The weather, not the play. I'm sure the play will be fine.
Yeah. Throughout. Well, they will have worked out all the kinks by then too, I'm sure. No, I'm just kidding. So this is
there's
awesome.
A signing with China Mieville on March 16th.
Ooh.
Wow.
16th.
He relocated from London to Chicago. I didn't know that.
Is he permanently there, or is he just there for the show, for the theater project? I don't know. I'm curious. What?
March.
What, you're trying to think if we should go like interview him?
Yeah, why not?
Oh,
hey,
just
China.
Because we usually do this over the internet, it's kind of easier that way.
Got a mic.
Let's do this thing. I know you're at a signing right now, but you're going to do an interview.
They'll wait.
They'll be fine. They'll be fine. They love the show. So yeah, that sounds like an amazing time, like a real lot of fun. And I hope that if you're in that region, you will stop by and support the theater production, because that sounds amazing and I'm totally jealous. Anyway, should we move on to the calendar?
Let's do. Today is February 19th as we are recording this, and out today, Elsewinds of the Glassthorn series by Melanie Ron and Trinity Rising by Elspeth Cooper.
Yes, and then on February 21st, we have The Different Girl by Gordon Dahlquist. Dahlquist? I think I said that right.
Dahlquist, sure.
And then on February 22nd, we have our book club wrap-up video style of Bridge of Birds by Barry Hughart.
Wow. I guess that's not that's happening early, but it's not because February only has 28 days.
Right. Short month.
February 26th. The Last Jedi by Michael Reeves and Maya Catherine Bonoff. That's a Star Wars novel. The Teleportation Accident, a novel by Ned Bowman. Between Two Thorns by Emma Newman. Ex-Heroes, a novel by Peter Klein's, all come out.
Yay. And then on March 1st, we have the Sword and Laser Book Club video kickoff of Down Below Station by C.J. Sherry. And then The Summer Prince by Aliyah Dawn Johnson. And then, of course, on the 5th, we have another Sword and Laser podcast for you. Am I supposed to keep going, or do I stop at the 5th?
I don't know. There's so many books coming out on the 5th. We'll just give them a couple highlights.
Okay.
Bob Salvatore, because we've interviewed him once, so we get to call him that. I don't know if we get to call him. Let's call him R.A. Salvatore. The Last Threshold, Neverwinter Saga, Book 4. Also, Marion Zimmer Bradley and Deborah J. Ross, The Children of Kings, a Darkover novel. And you pick one. Because there's like 12 books out that day.
I'm going to go with The Shape Stealer by Lee Carroll.
Right.
All right. A lot of
we'll tell you the rest of them on the next audio podcast.
Absolutely.
And also on the video podcast, actually.
All of those things. We're hoping to have Bob back on the show.
We're trying to get him. He's got, with the new books coming out, he'd like to talk to folks about that. So it'd be nice to talk to him again.
Did you hear my laundry alarm go off?
No, I didn't.
I should stop mentioning it because I don't think you guys can actually hear it.
Here, I'll make a deal with you. If I hear something weird, I will like call vicious attention to it.
Like, what was that?
Yeah. Otherwise, I didn't hear it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good to know. Let's move
on. What was that?
Let's thank our sponsors before I might have to go do my laundry. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. Now, we would recommend Down Below Station, which is our next book pick. It is available in audio form, and you can get that for free at audiblepodcast.com/sword. That is audiblepodcast.com/sword, and thank you Audible for continuously sponsoring us. You guys are awesome. I guess I don't mean continuously. I guess I mean for their great
for
support
their
over
continuous support. Yeah, Audible's been really good to us over the years, so we really want to thank them. And if you would like to thank them, just @reply them on Twitter. Say, hey, you know what? I'm an Audible subscriber because of Sword and Laser.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
I'm just wrapping up the most recent Gail Carriger book, Etiquette and Espionage, finishing school book one, which is great. Although it's kind of funny because this is a different narrator than the narrator who did the Parasol Protectorate, which I listened to exclusively.
It took some getting used to. Well,
she's
it's a different
pronouncing
series.
Things differently.
Oh, no.
She's
See,
pronouncing
and,
names differently.
But Gail Carriger, when we interviewed her, said that she, you know, she doesn't lay it down how they pronounce it, right?
Right.
Most authors don't.
But it's disorienting.
Yeah.
I won't say it because there's at least three characters that are crossover between the two
That
series.
Should make you feel better, though.
How so?
Because then when you pronounce things, you can just claim like, well, this is just my way of pronouncing
it's my interpretation.
Yeah.
that does make me feel better because I mispronounce things all the time.
See, and by the way, Down Below Station by CJ Cherry, not available in ebook anymore. So if you're getting ready for the March pick, perfect time to get the audiobook, I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying too. I just bought it tonight. So I am stoked. Well, I didn't really buy it. I used my credit because I've been a subscriber since like 2008. It's like
you
a
know,
really
I,
long time.
I wasn't a subscriber for a long time, even though I would buy audiobooks from Audible through iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, why am I wasting money?
You're like, I am literally throwing money away.
Because I would buy at least a book a month from Audible.
This is not part of the ad. We're just
no, it should be, but it's not. It's just true.
We're just really passionate about the products we use. Anyway, let's move on to Bury Your Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. I picked this thread from Tamahome, who wrote about, does science fiction lack good criticism?
No, that's fine.
Yeah, it's a pretty good book. It's okay. Now, this is based on, actually, do you remember we talked about Amazing Stories, the new blog that it's like an online magazine based
on the return of Amazing Stories.
Totally. This is a post by author Paul Cook. And he writes about what science fiction lacks. And he kind of answers his question in the first sentence. Good criticism and brave critics. That's what science fiction lacks. Then he goes on to explain that. And most of it is most of that ire is put on the most recent issue or any given issue of Locus, the newsletter of science fiction and fantasy industry. And where he says, basically, all the book reviews are pretty positive. They're rarely critical, but mostly they are laudatory to the point of excess. We eagerly await the next installment of this daring series, or the equally elusive, what we've come to expect from this author. I think he meant effusive, not elusive, but who knows? I'm not going to speak for him.
Yeah,
I think effusive would have been a better word there.
Yeah, I would have used effusive.
See, we're giving criticism to
well,
an author.
He asked for
he
it.
He wanted
no,
it.
It's only fair. Paul's like, no, not of me, of the books.
The other authors.
This is a common criticism of many reviews industries, from technology to video games to movies. And it's because if you want to properly, comprehensively review things, you have to cozy up to the supplier of the things. And so it's not even as disgusting as like, well, I'm going to kiss ass so I get free books. It's a personal relationship. You start to make friends with the authors. You start to make friends with the PR reps. And when you're writing your review, the pressure is like, well, I don't want to say that about Joe because he's such a really nice guy. Okay, and I don't want to get Peggy mad at me.
I totally get that. And I agree with you in many ways. But I also think that part of the problem is that so many reviewers are fans. Not just of like a specific author, but just of the stuff that they're reviewing, like technology. Right. Like, it's hard not to get excited about technology. Or like us, you know, we love science fiction and fantasy. We love reading this stuff. So it's hard sometimes because you just get so excited about like the newest book that you've been waiting for forever. But, you know,
and I'll throw in a third thing. Mm-hmm. The people who read your stuff are going to come down hard on you if you critique it. We know that. Mm-hmm. From saying things like, we haven't finished Wheel of Time series. And everyone's like, what? You are anathema. Unsubscribe. Unfollow. Yeah. I hate you. And it's like, no, I'm not saying, you know, and all of a sudden you're in defensive mode, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I totally, it's hard. It's hard. But he makes some good points. It's a long read. It's a very long post. Actually, it's not that long. There's just a lot of comments. A lot of long comments. But people are discussing, actually, Alex in our forum said, full disclosure, I only skimmed the article because it was so long. I totally didn't see that until just now. It's really funny. TLDR. So people are discussing this on the forums. You should jump in on what you think if you want to read that long post.
I've got two thoughts on it. One is, there is a way to be respectfully critical, mm-hmm. and that is harder than just being effusive or elusive. So I think that's one of the problems, but you have to work hard to do that. And I feel like on Sword and Laser, we try to do that with our monthly book picks, and we don't review books otherwise.
Right.
And so with the books we're actually reading, we try to be like, well, I'm not just going to say great things. I'm going to say what I really think about it. And that gets tough when you interview Scott Lynch after you've evaluated his book, whether you like it or not. So we feel that pressure. And the other thing is, one of the reasons we love having all of you awesome people on Goodreads is we can pull in a Lepton, a Tamahome, a Terp Kristen, a P. Aaron, and get your perspectives and your valid concerns. And that helps flesh out the opinions.
Mm-hmm. Totally. No, you guys are the best. So yeah, great post. Check it out and add your thoughts in Goodreads.
And I shouldn't have mentioned four people because now the people who aren't those four people are, what about me? What about me? Mean, you too.
No, but you're totally right, because when we read Bobby Dollar and we immediately had Ted Williams back on the show, it's really hard to ask the tough questions of one of your idols. It's
even just one of your idols, like just a nice guy. And you're just
super
like,
nice guy.
So why did your book suck? Not that his book sucked. I feel like I have to immediately say, right?
Yeah. I mean, I liked the book, but like, I would say it was like 60-40 in the forums, like liking it.
And so you do have to respectfully say, okay, well, nobody's perfect. Mm-hmm. No one thinks they're perfect, you know? So let's talk about some of these things. And if you're a person like Ted Williams, who is reasonable, or Patrick Rothfuss. We've met lots of these people who are reasonable. They won't get their back up and get all upset. They'll say, oh, of course, you know, there are always criticisms, and here's what I think of them.
Awesome. All right, well, let's move on to TV, movies, and video games. So George R. R. Martin is expanding his HBO deal. He's going to be working on some new stuff. He's apparently actively discussing Dunkin' Egg. I thought it was... It is.
Yeah, it's Dunkin' Egg.
It's Dunkin' Egg.
It's the spinoff from Song of Ice and Fire.
I don't know why I thought it was Duck and Egg.
Oh, really?
It's not. But
no, it's Dunk.
I saw Dunk and thought Duck. I should stop drinking.
Well, eggs, ducks.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, you can see why. Wow, that picture right there, the picture with the cat, that totally looks like Ted Williams.
Is it Ted Williams?
It's not Ted Williams, but
it's a cat.
Like Ted Williams.
All right. Yeah, so he's got a deal with HBO to create more or develop more TV series based on his works. Now, that, of course, means that he's developing them. It doesn't mean they'll actually put them on HBO, mm-hmm. but he's got a better chance than if he didn't have a development deal with them. It also means he gets 2 more years as executive producer on Game of Thrones.
Yes, we have an update on that. Martin has confirmed that a movie version of Fever Dream is in the works with an interesting director is interested in the project, a named director, so big name director. However, nothing has been signed yet. The Wild Cards franchise is currently being worked on as a movie collaboration between Sci-Fi and Universal, with Melinda Snodgrass having just delivered her first draft of the script.
That's excellent. So, okay, immediately a bunch of you are like, I want him to finish the books. Stop wasting his time. He can do both, and it's a good thing to have him getting more attention, more money, more exposure for his works. That will actually help move the book along.
There you
in
go.
In my opinion.
Yes, I hope you are correct.
Now, this next piece I'm extraordinarily excited about, because what I often answer, and it's always hard when somebody's like, what's your favorite sci-fi book? What I often answer, though, in fact, to my favorite book, is The Man in the High Castle by Philip K. Dick. I mm-hmm. absolutely love the book. I love the premise. He is one of my favorite authors, if not my favorite author. And Sci-Fi just announced plans to adapt the book The Man in the High Castle as a miniseries. It's set in an alternate universe where at the Axis won and Japan occupies San Francisco. Pretty much all the action, except for with a few exceptions, take place in Japanese-occupied San Francisco, but you do get to know the Germans and what they're up to. I am both very excited and very trepidatious about the fact that Sci-Fi is taking this on.
As anyone would be with a beloved franchise
yeah.
of any kind.
I mean, I think the Dune miniseries was much better than the movie, and arguably a very good attempt. It wasn't perfect, but a very good attempt at the first 2 books in the Dune series. So if it goes that direction, I won't be too upset.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
I like that it's a mini series. It's a shorter book, and they're gonna devote some attention to it.
Yeah, I'm excited for that too. I haven't read the series yet. I know people will be upset to hear.
It's not a series. It's just one book.
Oh, it's just one book. Okay, I haven't read the book yet. Maybe we should do it sometime.
Should do it. I've been holding off because it's my favorite book.
Oh, you don't want don't people know, to scary. Not like it.
Yeah. I mean, we did a Philip K. Dick. Have we done? We've done a Philip K. Dick. No. See, I'm too afraid.
We haven't done that. We want.
See, and here's the thing. If we do a Philip K. Dick book and we do The Man in the High Castle, it's not representative of his works.
So is I'm that always good or like, bad? Because we've done that before. We did that with Lem, and that was a bad idea.
Yeah, that was a
that
bad idea.
That did not turn out well.
Man in the High Castle is no Memoirs Found in a Bathtub. I'm not worried about that risk. Mm-hmm. But it also, people will get the wrong idea about Philip K. Dick in some instances, because he's not an alt history guy, and this is an alt history book.
Well, should we read?
But it's also got all of his themes
of Dream of Electric Sheep.
Yeah, I worry about that too, because it's like, oh, if you're expecting vote. Blade Runner, you're not going to get Blade Runner.
Oh.
So I almost feel like we should read something like Counterclock World or Clans of the Alphane Moon. And that's where I'm probably getting into Memoirs of a Bathtub.
But I don't know, but I want to read this because it sounds fun and you love it. And so that sounds like really appealing.
Doing Down Below Station. We got some time before Sci-Fi is going to get this.
Yeah, you've got another few months before it comes back around again. Before the laser comes back around.
Right.
But speaking of books, we should do a quick book check-in, or a relatively thorough book check-in, depending on how we feel.
Should do a meaty and substantive book check-in.
So this is amusing. This is amusing, and I will tell you why.
What is amusing?
This book check-in.
We're reading Bridget Burge by Barry Hughart.
Because I have finished the book now, but...
Did you keep reading?
Yeah, no. But I mean, I had not finished it in time. So
a little
discussion about how we do the video
sure.
show.
Yeah, we don't try to hide it.
No, we don't. But we record once a month because Tom needs to fly up from LA and Pixel Core has their studio. Yeah, it's just like, you know, scheduling stuff.
Getting the studio from Pixel Core and all that.
Right. And so we shoot once a month. And so that means we're shooting 2 author interviews and a book kickoff and a book wrap up. Not the same book. It's usually the wrap up of 1 month and the kickoff for the month after.
Right. So last Tuesday, we shot the wrap up of Bridge of Birds and the kickoff of Down Below Station.
Which was hilarious because I hadn't finished Bridge of Birds.
And you admitted it.
I admitted it on air, which you will see at the end of the month.
Fair. But now you have.
But now I have. I finished it 2 days later. I don't know. I couldn't. It's because I went on vacation. I was able to power through.
So all you people who complain, that the audio podcast gets short shrift on the book discussion, you're about to get the greatest gift Veronica can give you, which is her actual opinion about Bridge of Birds after she has finished reading it, which will not be on the video show.
That's true. But is it too soon? Because we're only halfway through the month.
Well,
we've got eight days left in the month.
I think our next episode is in March. Correct? Our next audio episode is in March. We just did the calendar.
It'll come out on the 1st, right?
No, our video episode comes out on the 1st. Audio episode comes out March 5th.
Yes.
So but that should be our kickoff of Down Below Station on the audio podcast.
I know, but I don't want... I mean, people still have 8 more days to read this book, so I don't want to spoil it for them.
Here's the thing. There's an email discussion you might want to fast forward to, but other than that, if you don't want to be spoiled on Bridge of Birds, stop now. Hold this podcast until you're done.
We have t-shirts available. That's in the addendum.
Buy the t-shirts.
Buy the t-shirts off the website in the store. Okay, anyway. Okay, so I finished the book, and I am surprised to say that everyone was right. I guess I shouldn't be that surprised to say, because, you know, the wisdom of crowds. But everyone was like, everything is going to come together at the end. It's going to all make sense. It's going to, like, give you a new perspective on the whole thing.
And it totally did.
And all of a sudden, everything started happening, and they started figuring out the whole story. And, you know, their quest for the ginseng root and the story about, you know, what's her nuts?
Well, see, I'm reading the second one now.
Oh, okay.
So I'm confused.
So, everything, like gosh, I can't think of words right now. This is what a half a glass of wine does to me.
Pretty ping?
No, not pretty ping. I'm not going to talk about that yet. I'm talking about the end of the book, where Lotus Cloud, you know, where that all comes together. And yeah, it made sense, and it was fun, and it was like a happy ending. And so that made me happy, and it made me feel better about the rest of the book. Because I was having a hard time. I was having a hard time getting into it. I was having a hard time, like, really appreciating it. And I think it was because it felt so flowery to me. And, like, I enjoyed some of the descriptions of the scenes and the people. But, like, I wasn't getting that, like, connective root that was really making me dig into the story. Like, I didn't feel tied enough to the story to make it feel like I had to keep reading. It felt like a fun diversion instead of something I had to continuously pick up.
I can totally identify with what you're saying, because I was enjoying reading it in a way that felt like it was wrong for the show or for the book club. I'm a big fan of a lot of Chinese poetry and the I Ching and some of the tales like Journey to the West. And I was enjoying it along those lines early on. And I'm like, but this isn't really fantasy. This is me enjoying a sort of fictional look, you know, in the way I would enjoy a Kobo Abe book, which is sort of magical realism, perhaps, but not really genre fiction.
Right.
And so I felt like, wow, I'm not sure this really belongs in the genre or not. And by the time I got to the end, I felt more, I felt above 50%. Still not entirely convinced it's a fantasy book, but yes, I definitely got much closer to being like, okay, yeah, this has got fantasy elements to it, and there's definitely a hero's quest, and and you can make a great argument that this is just a fantasy book from a different cultural perspective, the way 1Q84 was.
Yeah. And I was having a hard time connecting to the characters as well. I had a really hard time feeling really anything about Number 10 Ox. And I don't think that changed so much for me at the end. I just feel like he wasn't... I liked him as a character, but I didn't feel like he had the force of personality to be like the main character in the book. But maybe he really wasn't. Maybe he was just the vehicle for the story.
I actually feel like it is about him. And I differ. I don't disagree because it's your opinion, but I differ in that I love Number 10 Ox. In fact, Master Lee is obviously the favorite. Like he's hilarious, mm-hmm. you know, and he gets away with murder, literally. But Number 10 Ox is the one you identify with. He's the one where, or I do, where I'm like, oh yes, that is the outsider. That's the author. That's the normal person. That's, you know, other than his like crazy strength where he can just like carry Master Lee around mm-hmm. everywhere. He's the everyman. He's the peasant. He's the non-privileged viewpoint. And I really like that. And I liked his character.
I liked his character as a person. But I just feel like he could have been anyone. I feel like he was just a maybe vanilla character mannequin that could have been, that was just there to see all the things that happened. Like, I don't feel like he made any important decisions really until maybe the end.
We may be saying the same things and just, I like it and you don't, mm-hmm. which is that he is you. He's the everyman. He could be anyone because he's all of us.
Yeah, you're probably right. We're probably saying the same thing.
Yeah.
So there were things I figured out and things I didn't figure out. Like I figured out pretty early that Lotus Cloud was Jade Pearl. Mm-hmm. But I did not figure out about Key Rabbit. That was like totally a major surprise.
No, I was stunned at the moment that I read that line. I was like, oh, yeah, because Jade Pearl, there's so many hints, including Jade and Pearls.
Right.
It's like, okay, like you're hitting me over the head with this one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I almost want to go back and reread and be like, is this possible? Wait, didn't we see them in the same place at the same time at some point? But I'm guessing we don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember either. So I loved the visual elements of the story. I loved the weaving of the world. I loved hearing the descriptions and feeling like I was in that space, but it didn't grab me until the end.
I know you and I should be reading Down Below Station because we need to shoot that on March 12th, but I'm really enjoying the second book. I'm almost done with the second book in the Master Lee and Number 10 Ox trilogy. Mm-hmm. And it's different than the first one, mm-hmm. but it is enjoyable all on its own. And Number 10 Ox always gets a love interest that Master Lee never gets.
He gets many love interests.
He gets more in the second book, too.
Well, that brings us to another discussion, which is a little more of an intense kind of discussion. We don't have to dig into it too much.
No, a lot of people wanted to talk about this, so it's good to acknowledge it.
Nathan started a thread about Pretty Ping and her potential rape. Not a delicate subject, really. I mean, it's a pretty delicate subject to talk about. But so he writes, am I reading the sequence with Pretty Ping in chapter 5 wrong? It seems pretty clear she does not want Ox there, and her last word before he initiates the encounter is help. She later seems cool with everything, but I initially read that as the author saying she was okay being raped. If it was rape, I am somewhere between confused and disgusted. I definitely see that perspective, but further reading, I think, led me to believe that the help, and I mean, I'm not trying to read in too much to this because it's always, you know, walking on eggshells, but I thought it was more like help, like kind of a half-hearted, like I'm supposed to be saying this.
Okay. I'm going to trust you because A, you're a woman, B, you're the host of Vaginal Fantasy to interpret this for me because I can read it both ways. I honestly can. I can read, and I was not I was like a lot of people when I read that going, I don't know if this is okay, but I can also read it in a way that you're describing, which is like, okay, this is farce and mm-hmm. the help is a farcical help, but we are such the culture of no means no that it's right there on the knife edge of, well, if no means no, doesn't help also mean help? And how am I supposed to deal with that? But there's definitely an alternative reading where if you, in the tone of the book, in the farcical tone, mm-hmm. you can say she is just playing a part as she is up until this point. And there doesn't seem to be any weeping tears, negative fallout in the story. So I definitely want that to be the appropriate reading, but it didn't make me uncomfortable for sure.
Well, Michelle goes on to elaborate a little bit more in that thread. She goes on to say, "I'm sorry, but are you people serious? This is a humorous book." She warns, "I shall scream," and then sits there and watches Oxen dress in a house with servants. She doesn't scream. She doesn't try to run. She sits there. You can just picture her salivating over our big ox, who compared to the awful old man who owns her is like winning the lottery. And then they proceed to do a whole bunch of stuff with a funny Kama Sutra on opium names.
Yeah. No, this is the tension between a book that purports to be of medieval China and all of us who have been through HR sexual harassment training.
Yeah. So I'm seeing there's a lot of discussion going on here. It seems largely that the women in the thread feel the same way that I do, that, you know, in our reading, we did not get that sense. And the men are perhaps being a little overly politically correct, as some of the women have pointed out. So I'm not trying to start a fight here. And I appreciate the gentleman in the thread, you know, looking at it through these kinds of glasses, as Michelle said, because that's important to do. But overall, I think it's, you know, we should take the... It seems to me that the text is telling us one thing and that we're perhaps reading too far into it where we don't need to. You know, sometimes there's a case for a critical reading of this kind of thing where you're supposed to look for a separate kind of interpretation. I don't think this is one of those instances where we need to be interpreting further than the text.
Good. I'm relieved to hear that myself.
Yeah, I could be wrong. I'm not a literary scholar.
Yeah, sure. No, and like I said, there's definitely points in here that if you were to bring it up as an example in an HR her sexual harassment training, your tutor would say, "No, that is not okay." But that's also the workplace in a modern corporate environment, not China.
I'll never remember one of our CNET harassment training things. But they show
that's a one.
Am I allowed to say this? But the thing, do you remember they showed this slide where it's like it's a white woman and a black guy, and the woman is saying, "I like my coffee hot and black."
Oh yes, no, that was
and you're supposed to say that is not okay.
One of the most hostile things in the world you'll ever do is watch slides and sexual. I've been through, I think, 3 or 4 of these sexual harassment trainings, and they are important. I'm not trying to degrade the importance of them, but wow, yeah.
I will just never forget, "I like my coffee hot and black."
The
room just started cracking up. I mean, there was no helping that, unfortunately.
I actually do like my coffee hot, and I also drink my coffee black.
I like it with cream.
Please.
I do. That's how I drink my coffee. Yeah,
that's not the way you said it.
So let's talk about a slight flaw in his character.
Yeah.
Masterly's character.
P. Aaron became discussion leader because obviously
he
the guy
it was
who made
Becca.
The whiteboard that made everyone do this.
He thinks it was Becca, but it was me.
It was.
Go on, read it. Except, read what he wrote.
He said, "I love the heck out of this book. It's partly because of how neatly Hughart wraps up all the loose threads by the end. However, some mysteries remain, and one which has tickled my brain is the nature of Lee Cao's slight flaw in his character. At several points, Master Lee himself hints that it is his amorality, and certainly he's a scam artist of the first water, happy to lie, cheat, steal, and murder his way towards his goals. But those goals themselves regularly prove to be eminently moral ones, so where's the flaw?"
Well, I think all of that is probably his flaw, but I think the whole point of that is it suits the ending of the book, which is he did not figure all of this out because he was not pure. And I don't think we're supposed to figure that out beforehand, because characters we thought perhaps weren't pure, like Mr. Shen, turn out to be pure when you think that they are pure. But it turns out the whole reason that he can't see the love for Lotus Cloud is because he's not pure of heart. And so I, when I read that, I was like, oh, this is why he was telling us this the whole way. Like this is, but maybe it's just supposed to be funny.
I wonder if it is important to name the flaw or just to know that there is one, because the flaw is all of those things that P. Aaron says, right? Mm-hmm. The flaw is his amorality. The flaw is his drinking. The flaw is his disobedience, his lack of respect for authority. I mean, I think in my mind, and I hadn't really thought of it this much, to be honest, the slight flaw in his character was that his character isn't perfect. Mm-hmm. And it manifests in lots of different ways. But if you think about it as if the character is a gemstone, there's a gash in it. And right. That gash can cause all kinds of problems. It means it doesn't look as pretty, or you could cut your finger on it. Like it can manifest itself in all these different ways, but it is flawed. It is not perfect. And that carries on, I will say without spoiling things, into the second book. He continues to introduce himself as having a slight flaw in his character. And in new and interesting ways, he has these flaws in his character.
Mm-hmm. No, I love him. I love his character. I think he's great. No flaw there for me. All right, well, we wrap up this episode. We wrap up this book in the next episode of the video show, which you will hear a not-so-thorough recounting of the story from me.
Yes. But different opinions. And we'll talk about the roots of the story in actual Chinese mythology. Absolutely. On the video show.
All right, well, let's read some emails. We have one from Andrew R., who writes, Gaiman narrates the audiobook of Odd and the Frost Giants. It's a great audiobook.
Nice, concise, and full of good information email. Thanks, you, Andrew.
Actually, a few people on the forum said that Gaiman does, in fact, narrate a few of his books.
That's great.
So that is good. That's a good answer to our question from the last podcast. Eric W. wrote in saying, FYI, not sure if this will be fresh enough to cover on the SNL audio show next week, but he is referring to a Guardian UK article about the scandal happening with Orson Scott Card being hired to pen Superman. Superman is, of course, an ongoing comic. And, you know, the latest person who is supposed to be writing for them, for the DC comic, is, of course, Orson Scott Card, who we all know very well, of course, as the author of Ender's Game and the Alvin Maker series and tons of other books. Of course, he has a reputation of being anti-gay and having very strong feelings about...
Well, specifically opposed to gay marriage. And called it the end of democracy.
Yeah. We've discussed this in the past about our feelings. Like, do you support an author whose opinions or who you strongly disagree with in terms of moral points of view, or, you know, if you find them to be bigoted or, you know, for whatever reason, you may not like an author on a personal level. Does that detract from your enjoyment of their works, or do you feel compelled to no longer support those works? And there's another long thread going on right now in Goodreads that I wanted to point you guys to, because I don't think we need to discuss it too much on the show.
We have discussed it on the show previously, and I'm sure people in the forums can point you to those episodes.
Totally. But there is an existing conversation started by Daniel, who kicks off this thread, and it goes on for a while, and it's a lot of great points of view and a lot of great discussion. So if you want to jump into that, it's over on Goodreads right now.
All right, folks, in about 9 or 10 days, depending on how you count, we will be opening up submissions for the Sword and Laser Anthology.
Woo!
Details are already up on the site if you want to comb through them. There's a thread going where I will answer questions. I'll even answer questions that are answered in the page on swordandlaser.com. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I'll answer them twice. and of course, when we actually have a video episode going up on March 1st, we will officially inaugurate the submission period, and we'll go through May 15th. So if you're not already sharpening your pens, as someone said, it was very messy, get to working on it, because we'd love to see your submissions.
Yay. And I think everyone's allowed 3 submissions. Is that correct?
Yeah, up to 3.
Up to 3 submissions.
You know, it doesn't mean you have to write 3, but 3 is the limit.
Yeah. Are you going to write something?
I think I might take something out of storage and brush it up.
I think that's what I'm going to do too. I think I'm going to take my first NaNoWriMo and bring it back to its purest form.
Oh, okay. That's a cool idea. I'm actually taking an old short story that I had worked on, mm-hmm. but that's a nice idea.
I guess I could try to think of something else too.
No, I like that. Because I think I know, is it involved bears?
And dinosaurs.
Yeah. Do that. Do that. I'm a fan. I want to see that.
Yes. So that may happen. We'll see. But also in other news, we have t-shirts. Yay!
Thank you, Scott Johnson.
Scott Johnson has posted the official Sword and Laser t-shirt up on his store at /loot. So there's a link to it at swordandlaser.com. If you click on the store icon or the store link, I guess, up at the navigation at the top, you will see the Sword and Laser t-shirt. You can click on that. They've got kid sizes. They've got women's sizes. You can get it in gray. You can get it in black. So this is a different style than the one you may have previously gotten from us at Dragon Con.
This is the next generation.
It's the next gen. It's a little more modern. It's a little less a little less going on.
So
I like it. Simple and effective.
If you already bought a Sword and Laser or obtained a Sword and Laser t-shirt in the past, then you are OG. You've got the original Sword and Laser.
You've got, like, the website address on it. No one could take that away from
you. If you have not yet bought a Sword and Laser t-shirt, now you can get the improved, the cutting edge, the best version we've ever made.
There's also links to the Sword and Laser Stein, beer stein that you can buy on Cafe
really?
Press.
Oh,
and Sword
I love
and Laser
that
Kindle sleeve and Sword and Laser buttons. Though I have to say, we get no money from those things.
Oh, well.
All that money goes to Geek and Sundry.
Yeah, but that's okay. Support Geek and Sundry.
Yeah, support Geek and Sundry. But buy our t-shirts.
And buy t-shirts.
Mostly the t-shirts. Though I have to say, I purchased a beer stein for Tom and I. And they are
awesome.
Of fantastic quality. I'm very impressed. And you will see them on the next episode, Sword and Laser, if you want to see them in action. Not technically in action, because we don't drink on that show.
So buy a t-shirt to support us wholly. Mm-hmm. And buy a stein to support the good work of Felicia Day and Kim Evey and Sherry Bryant.
Yes, because they are awesome. And so are
the Because they made the video show happen. Without them, there is no video show.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's all we got.
That is it.
That is a show. So if you want to get in touch with us, the email address is feedback@swordandlaser.com. You can also write us an email through our contact section on the website. New and improved website, yay, over at swordandlaser.com. I'm still working on it. It's a work in progress. All of our discussions happen over on goodreads.com. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, the phone number is 415-7-SWORD-6. We will see you guys next week.
Bye.